Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, our guest is Victoria Killian. She lives in LA, Los Angeles, California. She was disabled since age 12 due to severe low back pain. She endured years of uncertainty until diagnosed with ankylosing spondylitis. Over the years, she was also diagnosed with gastroparesis, narcolepsy, primary immunodeficiency, long COVID, and a rare genetic mutation affecting skin healing and hypermobility. Victoria's disappointment with the current state of the U.S. healthcare system sparked her involvement in patient advocacy and education. She is a member of the Advocacy Committee at the Spondylitis Association of America and on the California Advocacy Team at the U.S. Pain Foundation and on the California State Advocacy Committee at the Arthritis Foundation. Victoria, welcome to SpondyCast, and today we're going to talk about what to do if you're denied. So thank you for joining us.
Of course, it's fantastic to be here.
Yeah, very much appreciated. So we want to talk about denial and insurance. Would you like to share any of your story with us just to get started?
So for me, denial with insurance started to happen once I got out of a large HMO network that I had been in since I was a child. It became very apparent to me that medications that I needed were going to constantly, persistently be denied by my insurance, my commercial insurance carrier. And I have taken it upon myself to multiple times file grievances with my insurance company because I rightfully deserve the care that my physician wants for me. And so I started to learn the system of the grievance process, of the appeal process, of independent medical review, simply because myself, multiple other family members kept getting denied services that shouldn't have been denied for very minute reasons or very vague reasons, such as medical necessity, wasn't medically necessary. And I just wrote letters. I just started to write letters. I started to appeal because that was given to me as an option within the letter that the insurance carrier sent me. And I've been fairly successful. I have actually never had an appeal that was sent through the state regulatory agency denied. Okay. So persistence is one thing that is incredibly important when it comes to insurance denials.
So yes, I would agree with you. And I wouldn't want to be there on a bad day. I can imagine your frustration, but you're channeling it well. Can you explain to us what it means when your insurance company denies coverage for a treatment or a medication or a therapy that's prescribed?
Yeah. So when the insurance company denies treatment, coverage, medication, it's because they're refusing to pay for something. They're stating that they don't want to pay for it. They're using it a lot of times as a cost control measure or to force patients into trying, say, a different medication that is less cost prohibitive for the insurance company. And they do it often through no real exact reason. Sometimes they will do it for one patient, but they won't do it for another patient. The exact same ask from the exact same physician for the exact same procedure or medication. And it can be really confusing as a patient because denial actually means a lot of different things. There could be many different reasons for denial.
So as you're going through this, right, like no scientific method. Well, maybe there is a scientific method, but it's not apparent of how they do that. How often does this happen, especially for people with chronic diseases?
So I actually did a little research on this because I was curious, how often are insurance company denials happening? And KFF, which is an independent online news source for health policy, they're very well known. They do a lot of research in this space. They pulled some numbers from government information that's available from ACA plans. And it seems like it's anywhere between 2 to 49% of things are denied, which is like a huge range. Some companies don't deny as much as other companies. And it is actually very difficult for them to quantify overall which patients are getting denied and how often certain things are getting denied.
Interesting. I would love to see the data on if women and underrepresented groups are more frequently denied.
Yeah, that would actually be really interesting data to see, because I would bet that probably. And yes, this obviously denial for somebody like me who is in the city of Los Angeles, you know, maybe I have, you know, access to a lot of different physicians who, you know, maybe if one physician isn't willing to help me fight a denial, I can find another one. But for people in rural America or in areas that have deficiencies in medical professionals, it's really hard to find medical professionals that are willing to help you fight and overturn that denial.
Right. Because you range, and I think we had Dr. Dora on, you range from areas and socioeconomic status that can support the extra costs associated with, right, in an office. It's an extra cost to have somebody on the phone all day with the insurance companies for your patients. And then we don't need to get in, maybe we, another day, we can get into what Medicare, Medicaid denials look like. But yeah, I'm sure it has a lot to do with access. And this is where, like, right, it, being able to hack the system, as you say, for some of our listeners might be like super useful. So what was the first time you were ever denied?
So the first time that I remember getting denied where it was a huge deal was actually not for something ankylosing spondylitis related. It was for Botox injections for hyperhidrosis. I've had hyperhidrosis, which is severe excessive sweating underneath my arms, for several decades now. And before I changed insurance carriers, I was on a regimen of Botox about twice a year, and it worked really well. I had failed all other treatment options, all other topicals that were available at that time. And I knew that there was an exclusion in my policy, which is known as the Evidence of Coverage Booklet, EOC, that hyperhidrosis was not covered at all. No treatments, no therapies, nothing for hyperhidrosis was covered, which is kind of ridiculous because hyperhidrosis can be an incredibly debilitating condition. So I asked my physician to put in for a prior authorization. They did. It got denied. I felt that the denial was ludicrous. And so I appealed the denial directly to the insurance company. They, of course, sent me back a letter that said, this is not a covered service. You cannot have it. So I went to the Department of Managed Healthcare here in California, which is our regulatory agency in California that oversees about 90% of the health insurance plans here in California, and filed for an independent medical review. And through that process, I was contacted by my spouse's benefits department, because he happened to have a plan that was directed by his employer. And when they found out that this was not a covered service, they actually changed the plan in the following year to exclude the statement of hyperhidrosis, so that not just me, but tons of other potential family members, patients, employees could get this service that helped tremendously.
Amazing.
So I was very lucky. I'm also very persistent. I follow up. And I think that's what helped that situation to actually come to fruition.
Yeah. And I think, so does every state have a Department of Managed Healthcare? Do you know?
Not every state has a Department of Managed Healthcare. There are some, but most of the time it's your state Department of Insurance that is the regulatory agency.
Okay.
When you receive a denial letter, in that letter, they are required to tell you what department in your state oversees that medical plan. So you definitely need to keep the letter, read the letter, the entire thing. I know sometimes it's like 5 pages long, but it will tell you within there who is the overseer in the government of your plan in your state.
So do you know when you receive the denial, they're required to tell you who you can contact at the state level and the specific reason for the denial, correct?
Yes. So they have to, they are legally required to tell you the reason for the denial. They are legally required to tell you this in writing. So some people may have opted out of snail mail, but you should at least receive a letter through email notification if you've opted out with your insurance carrier or through the mail that has all of that information in it as to why it was denied, who signed the letter of denial, which sometimes is an interesting person, you know, who made that determination, as well as contact information for more questions, the right that you have to appeal, as well as information on different languages, if you want to talk to somebody in your native language as opposed to English, and how you can contact the state agency that oversees that medical plan.
Okay, so what are the most common reasons for denial? Are they canned or are they?
It seems like the most common reasons are it's not medically necessary. Step therapy, they force you into step therapy, which is you must try these three other medications before you are allowed this medication.
Right.
Denial of brand name medication over generic. As well as sometimes you're denied because of paperwork issues or errors or omissions that your physician had when they put in the original prior authorization request. And sometimes it's because you didn't get a prior authorization for a service that you had done. And most of the time, you don't know whether or not something requires a prior authorization unless you call your insurance company every time you get something done.
Okay. So if I'm denied, do you have a hack of like process to go after this?
Yeah. So when I'm going to use one of my last large denials that happened, and that was specifically for ankylosing spondylitis. I was on Humira for a really long time. It wasn't really working super great. I wanted to go back on brand name Remicade, and my insurance company denied brand name Remicade. I was in discussion with my physician at the time because I also have a primary immune deficiency and a very overactive immune system. And I knew that if I exposed myself to a biosimilar, which are great for the majority of people, they do not have problems with this. I want to stress this.
Right.
Me personally, I could have a much higher instance of a reaction because it's similar, it's not identical. And so we fought with the insurance company over months and months, and they just kept telling me step therapy, step therapy. I followed that process along by continuing to contact my physician's office, asking if they had sent in the appeal. When they did it, then I would contact my insurance carrier, speak to somebody at the insurance carrier, and ask them, did you get the appeal? And this is really important. When you call your insurance carrier, anytime you're talking about a grievance, an appeal, anything like that, which I'm using interchangeably, by the way, grievance and appeal, they're basically the same thing, just different terminology. You need to ask for a reference number for the phone call.
Yes.
And write that down. Because that's your only documentation that you contacted your insurance company. And trust me, the person that you talked to will actually write notes because you asked for that reference number. And so again, kept going back and forth. I was denied again. We tried changing the dosage and still asked for brand name Remicade. We were denied again. It's the persistent follow-up process. It's the putting into my phone reminders of when the date is that they need to answer my physician regarding this medication so that I can immediately follow up with my physician's office as well as the insurance company. Now, unfortunately, that was actually one of the times that we did not get the appeal overturned, okay, even through going to the state regulatory agency. So it was super unfortunate. I tried the medication. I had a reaction, and it, you know, sometimes step therapy is not great. Most of the time, step therapy is not great. I don't like it at all, but that's what they forced me into. It was really hard to overturn step therapy. One of the easiest ones to overturn is medical necessity.
Right. Did they overturn it in the end?
No. So we ended up just completely forgetting about Remicade and turning to a completely different biologic I had never tried before, which now I've been on for about a year. So overall, it turned out. Yeah. Overall, it eventually turned out
pain,
okay.
Right. Like the, and when I say pain, it's physical pain, it's mental pain, it's emotional, soul, your soul breaks. Yeah.
Yeah, correct.
I think anyone listening can understand, like, the change of a biologic is, to me, like, I have to be a DEFCON 1 to start considering it.
And yeah, it's difficult.
Yeah.
And then to have your insurance company just be like, nope, what your doctor says isn't correct. You have to follow our little step therapy procedure.
Yeah. I've gone in, and when they start talking about it, I'm like, no. I'll get myself together. I'll diet. I'll change my routine. I'll exercise. I'll quit my life. I'll, if you want me to, I'll have another child if I don't have to switch. Because that would be easier than switching a biologic in my mind. Okay. So as people, so follow up. Do you tend toward copying if you're going to write a letter to the State Department? Do you copy the insurance company and the benefits and your physician? Do you kind of loop everybody in just so that no one has plausible deniability as the process unfolds?
I actually don't, because I know majority of time I'm going to have to end up filing a grievance with the state regulatory agency.
Okay.
Most of the time when you appeal to your insurance company, they will not overturn that appeal. They will be like, nope, we said it's not medically necessary. It's never going to be medically necessary. You need to prove otherwise, is basically what that's telling me. I will go through their procedures, which are, once you file a grievance over a denial of coverage of services or medication, they have 30 days to get back to you. And that's 30 calendar days, not 30 business days. Don't let them try to screw around with that.
Okay.
They need to send you a letter and make a determination within that 30-day time frame. If you are, say, in a really critical spot and it is potentially life-threatening in some way, shape, or form, you can ask for the grievance to be expedited. That then means that they have to give you a determination as to whether or not they will expedite it, as well as the potential outcome, within 72 hours. Now, they can deny the expedition, telling you, you know, this isn't really something that can be expedited. But sometimes, depending, like, especially if you are, say, in between medications, you're really going downhill, you cannot function at all, like, it is really life-threatening.
Right.
I would highly suggest just filing and seeing if they will do it, because that also gives you ammunition once you head to the state agency, the state regulatory agency.
Okay.
So 30 days is what they have to get back to you.
So once you get the denial notice, there's also a time constraint, correct?
Yes.
So the day you get that letter that says this wasn't medically necessary, does that vary from state to state, how long you have to actually contact and fight it?
That I'm actually not sure. I think it might be 60 to 90 days after you've received the denial, but it should state it in the letter, but I'm not 100% sure.
Okay. And probably it varies from state to state would be my guess. But it's probably not federally regulated. Okay. Let's talk about record keeping. We talk about this a lot in Spondyland. You said you put it in your phone. I'm a big proponent of that. What do you suggest people keep in terms of records?
So I actually, most of the conversations that I have are actually kept in a notebook. I actually write it out because that helps me to more easily remember it. I have a notebook that is just dedicated to interactions with my insurance company. And so I'll put the date, I put the time, I put the reason why I contacted the insurance company, the representative that helped me. I write out the conversation that we had, you know, this is what they told me. This is, you know, what the conclusion was. This was the reason why I was sent the letter. This was the person, you know, who is overseeing that particular case of appeal. And then again, I ask for the reference number to the phone call, and that is always documented in one folder. I will then utilize my phone for reminders of the dates that they tell me, so that I remember, oh, today I need to contact my insurance company again to follow up and see where is the grievance process. How are they actually close to giving me an answer? And once that 30 days hits, that's immediately, no matter if they have determined anything or not, I will file immediately with the state regulatory agency because their time is up.
Okay. Total curveball. You're not a project manager, are you?
Because I've been a consultant for so long, I have to document everything, because if I don't, I'm just never going to remember.
Right.
There's so much medical stuff that we have to remember. If it's not written down in such a, you know, specific fashion, it's really difficult to remember. And I know that there are people that have difficulty with, you know, the executive functioning, that you know, having to deal with all of the different medical issues that you deal with, you know, a spondylitis diagnosis, it can be very overwhelming. That's why just maybe take one step. Maybe you have a section, if you love your phone and your phone is the thing that you use for notes, you start a note and it just says insurance company interactions. And that's where you start writing it down, just so you can start one portion of this, because you do need to record keep in order for you to remember who you spoke to, what they said, so that it gives you larger ammunition once you get to that state regulatory agency.
Yeah, it's a pile. I remember moving and carrying like multiple boxes out of like medical when I moved. It was insane. Yes. That was like the diagnosis pathway. Okay, so did we discuss what key information you want to include in an appeal letter? I know you hit on a few things.
Yeah, some of the key information that you really want to hit on is, say it's for they're denying you coverage of a medication because it's not medically necessary. So in your letter, you want to include at the top your name, your subscriber ID, the documented number for the grievance, which most of the time is on the denial letter that they sent you, as well as things like your birthday and your contact information, all of your contact information, including address and phone numbers where they can reach you. Then you go into the letter part. And in the first paragraph of the letter, you want to say, you denied me X service for this particular condition. Basically, I'm going to tell you why that is not the case. And then you go into telling them why you believe the service should be covered, whether it's, hey, I just changed insurance carriers. This was, you know, a medication that I was on with my prior insurance carrier. It's worked for 5 years. Here are the medical records that prove that. That's when you have to contact your physician's office, get the medical records that show that you had been on that medication and that you had been improving or stable for a long period of time. Include those with your letter. Tell them exactly what you want. I want coverage of this medication by, you know, this particular date, blah, blah, blah. And then sign the letter and send the letter. Those are some really important bits of information that they need in order for them to maybe overturn the denial, which, let's be honest, most of the time we're going to be dealing with state regulatory agencies in terms of overturning denial.
Okay. So that actually is great. I wonder if we can template that.
Yeah, there's a lot of templates online for all different reasons. And that's why you can type in, you know, grievance letter for denial of medication, and tons of different letters and stuff like that will start to pop up.
And do you find, I don't know if there's any like quantitative data here, but do you find that the storytelling element is useful, or is it a just the facts kind of letter?
So I've really only found that more fact-based things are are maybe going to get you somewhere, because you have to think that these people are reading thousands and thousands of letters trying to either overturn denials or deal with, you know, denial of coverage and grievance processes. And so the faster you can get to, you are denying me service, I deserve it because, is really the better way to go. And it's not even emotionally, it's why do you as a patient deserve that service? Because we all do, we deserve medical coverage, but you do have to give them some reasons as to why. And I'll give you a very large example of the way that I have done this for a family member for a very long time. I do it at least once a year because we are always denied coverage of hyaluronic acid injections into the knees for osteoarthritis. And first it started with just a letter. The insurance company denied it. I went and asked for an independent medical review from the state regulatory agency. And I included a couple copies of beneficial clinical trials and stuff that were done on hyaluronic acid injections in the knees. They then sent it to an outside physician who looked over all of that information and said, yes, these are necessary because of all of the things that you just said. Every single year I do that, and I include all of the previous letters and overturns of all of these different medical professionals that have done independent medical reviews. So that's why it's also important to keep copies of everything. Is sure. You can use other overturned denials as proof that this one should also be overturned.
Right. Kind of like a precedent.
Yeah. Even if it was with a former insurance company, still sure. Keep it.
Sure. If you get a competent doctor, right, who can help you out there, you can pull precedent. Okay. Where do you go to find information, or where can people go if they're struggling? Obviously SAA's website and the podcast, but like, are there good resources out there for people?
There is the Patient Advocate Foundation. They have a couple different templates and stuff like that on their website. They themselves help patients, but sometimes it's really difficult to get an actual advocate to handle your case because they're so overloaded. But they do have a lot of resources on the Patient Advocate Foundation's website that can help you along with the grievance process. Okay. You can also contact your state regulatory agency and talk to somebody there. Most of the time, they can tell you the exact procedure. Hey, you have to contact your insurance company first, and then so many days, you know, you can contact us and then go on our website, fill out this particular form. And then, you know, we have X amount of days in order to tell you whether or not the service was still denied. The state regulatory agencies can actually give you a lot of information.
Okay. And this came to mind, but maybe it's a conflict of interest. Do any of the pharma companies have patient advocates?
Some of them do, but I can tell you as an individual who has contacted pharma for a couple different issues with some of my medications, their representatives are not as educated as we might hope that they would be, at least okay. The ones that I have come in contact with. Some of the terminology that I have utilized, they don't understand. And it's kind of critical for them to know the basics in order to help. They may have, if it's medication-based, they may have template letters that you can download on their websites in order to more easily have a template to fill in if there's a denial of coverage for a medication. But in my experience speaking with their advocates, they have not been as helpful as I wanted them to be.
Fair. Okay, so let's get to any advice when people get overwhelmed, because it is exhausting and you get on the phone and somebody's yelling at you, and maybe they're not yelling at you from the insurance side, but they certainly are not always helpful. They're like stoppers, I feel like sometimes. Do you have any tactics for keeping yourself emotionally managed during this process?
Know that you are not the only patient that's getting this letter. They probably sent out 1,000 of those the day that you received them. And don't get too scared the first letter that you receive, because that's just the first no. That doesn't mean that you will never get coverage for this one particular thing. It just unfortunately means that you are going to have to spend some of your precious time to try to overturn it. And I know that for a large majority of patients, this may be difficult because they have jobs and they have kids and they have family members they're taking care of. And, you know, it's difficult to set aside that time during 9 to 5 when the insurance company is open, as well as the state regulatory agencies. But I would just encourage people to understand that this is a long game when it comes to fighting for coverage for things with insurance. Also, talk to your doctor, because especially if it's in dealing with medication, your doctor may be able to temporarily put you on something else that may give you some relief while you're waiting for that one medication that you really, really need that may really help you. Also know that there is actually one Facebook group that I know of called Harnessing Healthcare on Facebook that is very helpful when you want to complain or ask questions of other individuals who are dealing with United States medical insurance just like you. And there's a lot of camaraderie in that group. There's a lot of information that you can get from that group if you're feeling a bit overwhelmed, like you don't have enough knowledge in order for you to feel confident that you can do this. You can. All it is writing a letter to another person who is going to read the letter and send it through a system that's going to probably deny it. So it may not even necessarily be an individual that's doing this themselves. You're going to get a denial, and then you're going to contact the insurance company. And again, talk to more people, ask questions. That's what the insurance company representatives are there for. They may not always give you the right answers, or they may not know, but just really try to take control of your health by constantly asking questions and documenting.
Okay. I captured 5 key themes there. 1, when you get the letter, don't take things personally because you're probably not the only one. Appealing can be a marathon. Engage your doctor. Lean on other people who've been through this. And be curious and ask tons of questions along the way.
Yes, very much so. Okay.
I don't know how I managed that. That was,
I know, that was great.
Yeah. It was like, I should be doing this more. But I think those are really important things. And I think this key around, cause it does, I mean, I can remember at times just you lose it, right? Your head spins and our time is too valuable to be letting the insurance company take up space in our heads. Rent free, to quote some country song, I'm sure there. Okay. As we come to a close here on our time, any hopeful things, good pieces of advice, good bits that you want to share with people?
There are a lot of advocates like myself that are really trying to force government to change the system because it's not fair that critically ill patients are having to constantly fight with the insurance carriers that we pay money for. So just know that even if you are not one of them, there are a ton of people out there, advocates like myself, that are really trying to affect change so that you don't have to deal with these issues forever. Because that is not the goal, is for you to constantly be fighting your insurance company. This should be a lot easier. Know that everybody knows that and that we're trying. It's just going to take a little bit. Same thing with your appeal. You're going to try. It's just going to take a little bit.
I love it. And is there a repository for people to like talk to their representatives or local Congress on the advocacy in terms of denials and insurance claims?
Yes. If you're having issues over and over again with your insurance company, you can contact your state in representatives. For me here in California, I have an assembly person. I have a senator. Contact them, tell them your story, tell them you're having the same issue over and over again with your insurance company. You don't know what to do. Their offices actually can help you sometimes. I have had that happen with an appeal that was delayed with the state regulatory agency. I contacted my assembly person and their office helped me. Contact your congressperson, your United States congressperson, as well as your senators. Tell them your story, because the more times that they hear about the fact that this is affecting the average American more and more and more, the more stories they can collect to then begin to legislate.
Boom. It's all in policy.
Yeah.
Okay. Victoria, thank you for your time and for all the work you do. And on behalf of SAA, thank you for the work you do with us. And yeah, I can't wait to get this one out there.
Awesome. Thanks so much. I do appreciate being here.
SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie. Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.